Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, May 8th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
U.S. futures fall after the broadest day of declines for stocks since December.
Equities in Asia fall ahead of crucial trade negotiations in Washington.
And Jamie Dimon weighs in on trade talks. We speak with the J.P. Morgan CEO in Beijing.
Iran sets a 60-day countdown to resume uranium enrichment, plus a deadly fire in Harlem claims six. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Dramatic ninth-inning wins for both the Mets and Yankees. Playoff wins for Toronto and Denver in the NBA. St. Louis, an NHL Game 7 win, double overtime.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak, brought to you by Interactive Brokers, rated number one best online broker in 2019 by Barron's. Find out why. Visit ibkr.com/yib to learn more.
U.S. futures are lower this morning following the broadest sell-off in stocks since December. It is 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 13 points, Dow futures down 113, NASDAQ futures down 39, the DAX in Germany is down 0.2%, CAC in Paris down about 0.3%, and the FTSE 100 down about 0.4%. Nikkei 225 in Japan fell 1.5%, the Hang Seng in Hong Kong down 1.25%. 10-year Treasury up 5/32nds, the yield 2.43%, yield on the 2-year 2.27%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.33% or 20 cents to $61.20 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.4% or $5 to $12.90.60 an ounce. The euro 1.1201 against the dollar. The yen 109.98. Nathan.
Karen, after the broadest day of declines for U.S. stocks since Christmas, equities in Asia followed suit today. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Shares fell across the region with the brunt of decline seen in Japan and Hong Kong. In China, the CSI 300 was down 1.4%. In Japan, a stronger yen saw the Nikkei fall 1.5%. The yen rising as investors sought safe haven assets, the yen hitting a six-week high against the greenback. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Julia, thank you. Chinese Vice Premier Liu He is headed to Washington for trade talks with the threat of higher tariffs less than 48 hours away. Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie reports from Beijing.
These could be make or break conversations. And the question really is whether or not the Chinese side goes to D.C. ready to make some concessions, or if the Chinese side go there playing hardball. We've seen a commentary from the People's Daily, the mouthpiece of the party, out saying that China is confident that it can deal with these trade talk challenges, but the omens to some degree don't look good. We've also spoken to Liu Xiang from the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. We've got a quote from him. This is a state-backed think tank here in Beijing. Liu Xiang saying, if the Trump administration follows through with tariffs, it means, I think, talks will fall apart. We then need to prepare for worse than worst.
And sources tell Bloomberg the Chinese are preparing retaliatory levies on U.S. imports should the White House follow through with tariffs on Friday.
Well, meanwhile, Jamie Dimon still sees a high probability the U.S. and China will strike a deal. The J.P. Morgan Chase CEO spoke with Bloomberg in Beijing.
Whatever the odds were before, like I think it's still 80% they'll get it done. The odds of something bad happening is now doubled. Whatever you thought they were, if it was 2% or 5%, 10%, is probably doubled. And that's why the markets are reacting to it.
Dimon also tells us he thinks no deal would be better than a bad deal with China.
Trade data out of China overnight could increase pressure on Beijing to reach an agreement. An unexpected fall in exports and rise in imports show a somewhat tentative recovery for the world's second largest economy. Helen Chow is chief Greater China economist at Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Weak external demand is weighing on China overall exports, and therefore, as a contributor to overall industrial activity, I'm afraid that external sectors are not necessarily right now being the most important contributors.
China's exports to the U.S., Japan, South Korea, and Europe's largest economies all slowed in April.
In Europe today, earnings from a takeover target are front and center. Commerzbank added clients and boosted lending in the first quarter, but profits still declined in the period. Bloomberg's Chad Thomas has more from Berlin.
The CEO said that they're pursuing the, quote, right strategy and that they need to work on profitability after these talks collapse with Deutsche Bank. The real big question here is, what is the German government going to do? Let's remember, they're the largest shareholder in Commerzbank, so no merger takes place without them weighing in and saying yes.
After merger talks with Deutsche Bank collapsed, Commerzbank is now seen as a takeover target for the likes of UniCredit, ING, and other European banks.
Back here in the U.S., shares of Lyft are down 0.5% in early trading. The ride-hailing company's first quarter earnings report since going public showed strong growth, but also big losses. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has the story.
The San Francisco-based company projected second quarter revenue of $800 to $810 million. Analysts were expecting $782 million. Despite surpassing expectations, that growth rate of about 60% would be a major slowdown from the previous period. Lyft also reported an eye-popping net loss of $1.14 billion in the quarter, which was larger than the company's loss for the entire year of 2018. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thanks. And coming up today, we get earnings from 10 companies in the S&P 500, including Disney. Here with a preview is Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The planned November launch of the Disney Plus premium cable network is already having an impact on the company's bottom line, and as spending on content, marketing, and technology ramps up, operating losses will increase. Bloomberg Intelligence says Disney is also facing headwinds from its theme parks. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Jeff, thank you. And as Uber's IPO gets underway this week, sources tell Bloomberg the company has enough demand to price its offering at the top of its range. As of late yesterday, investors had put in orders for at least three times the amount of stock on offer.
Meanwhile, ride-hailing drivers in major cities across the U.S. and the U.K. plan to strike today over low wages and unstable working conditions. It's billed as an international protest ahead of Uber's IPO, with groups in New York, Boston, L.A., and San Francisco planning to participate in the strike.
S&P futures are down about 13 points this morning. Dow futures down 117, NASDAQ futures down 40, and the 10-year Treasury up 6/32, yield 2.43%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. 6:07 on Wall Street. Time to check the latest world and national news with Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Iran's president says he will keep excess enriched uranium and heavy water, setting a 60-day deadline for new terms for its nuclear deal. Hassan Rouhani said today that if the deadline passes without better terms, Iran will begin higher enrichment of uranium. Through an interpreter, the president says France, Britain, Germany, Russia, and China have been notified.
Our people should know that we have not left the JCPOA. They should not confuse issues and think that the JCPOA is no longer. The JCPOA still exists.
Six people are dead, including four children, after an overnight fire in a Harlem apartment building. Officials say the blaze started in a fifth-floor apartment of the Fred Samuels houses. Authorities say the blaze appears to be accidental. One student is dead after two suspects opened fire in a Denver-area school yesterday. Eight others were wounded. Douglas County Sheriff Tony Spurlock.
The quick response of the officers that got inside that school helped save lives.
The two suspects are in custody. President Trump reportedly lost more than $1.1 billion in the 1980s and 90s. According to tax records obtained by the New York Times, Trump's businesses generated huge losses and his hotel and casino properties were eligible for large write-offs, allowing him to only pay taxes for 2 years between 1985 and 1994. Attorney General William Barr is threatening to have President Trump invoke executive privilege to head off demands by the House Judiciary Committee for the full, unredacted Mueller report. Today, Judiciary Chairman Gerald Nadler has scheduled a vote to hold the AG in contempt of Congress. President Trump's former chief of staff, John Kelly, is opening up about his time in the White House. He spoke to Carlyle Group founder David Rubenstein for an upcoming episode of Peer-to-Peer Conversations on Bloomberg TV. Kelly talked about members of Trump's family serving on the White House staff.
They're an influence that has to be dealt with.
And today, if you were...
I don't mean, I by no means mean Mrs. Trump. First Lady's a wonderful person.
Kelly's remarks pointed to his long-running frustration with the role of the president's daughter, Ivanka Trump, and her husband, Jared Kushner. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 6:09 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashow.
Nathan, a much-needed win for the Mets. Losers of four in a row, seemingly unable to score runs. They trailed the Padres 5-2 in the seventh inning. They tied the game, and then in the ninth, Pete Alonso, the rookie who's been the Mets' MVP so far, unloaded a long two-run homer. San Diego got one back in the bottom off Edwin Diaz. They had the bases loaded, but the Mets hung on. 7-6, Robinson Cano had four hits. Similar drama in the Bronx. The Mariners led 4-1 in the eighth inning, 4-2 in the ninth. Gio Urshela, who had committed a costly error, atoned. A game-tying two-run homer, and the Yankees weren't done. They rallied for another ninth-inning run, driven home by DJ LeMay, who they beat Seattle 5-4. They've won 13 of the last 17. The first no-hitter of the season in Oakland by the A's, Mike Fiers against Cincinnati. It's the second no-hitter of his career. He was helped by two great defensive plays back-to-back in the sixth inning. For the third time in the Stanley Cup playoffs, a Game 7 went overtime. For the second time, it went double overtime.
Here's Thomas. He stick handles in. Thomas off the goalpost. It's loose. They score! St. Louis native Patrick Maroon is the hero in double overtime for the Blues.
2-1 over Dallas. St. Louis advances to the West Finals against Colorado or San Jose. Their Game 7 is tonight. NBA playoff blowout wins at home for both Toronto over Philadelphia, Denver over Portland. The Raptors and Nuggets grab 3-2 series leads. Country House, the long shot that won the Kentucky Derby when Maximum Security was disqualified, has a cough. Will not run the Preakness. Maximum Security isn't going to be in it either. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. Futures contracts extending losses this morning. S&P futures down 12 points now. Dow futures down 105 points. NASDAQ futures down 39.5. The VIX above 20. Highest level since January, and oil is trading lower as well this morning. We're going to check in with Bloomberg Oil Brief Editor Christopher Sell straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up to 6:12 on Wall Street, Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high return income producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net. Good morning.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures are lower this morning, and Bloomberg Daybreak is out on customer terminals, bringing you all the news you need to start your day. Let's get a check at the latest headlines with Hannah George at the Bloomberg Daybreak desk. Good morning, Hannah.
Good morning, Karen. Iran is scaling back its pledges under the 2050 nuclear deal and threatening to resume uranium enrichment beyond agreed limits. It's a move that may heighten tensions with the US. President Trump lost more than $1 billion over 10 years on failed business deals. That's according to tax records obtained by the New York Times, which says the losses were so high he didn't pay income tax for 8 of the 10 years. China has full confidence it can overcome difficulties in trade talks with the US. That's according to comments from Chinese government media as Vice Premier Liu He heads to Washington for negotiations. And William Barr is threatening to have President Trump use executive privilege to head off demands for the unedited version of the Mueller report. The move by the Attorney General comes as the House Judiciary Committee decides whether to hold him in contempt of Congress. For all the news you need to start your day, check out Daybreak on your mobile phone on the Bloomberg Anywhere app. Karen.
Hannah, thank you. S&P futures are down 12 points. Dow futures down 106. NASDAQ futures down about 40. The DAX in Germany down almost 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 6/32. Yield 2.43%. Yield on the 2-year 2.26%. And NYMEX crude oil is down 0.3% or 23 cents at $61.17 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.3%, up $4.10 at $12.89.70 an ounce. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, authorities have identified one of the two students in custody who they say shot and killed a classmate and injured eight others in a Denver area charter school. Douglas County Sheriff's officials say 18-year-old Devin Erickson and a younger student walked into the STEM school Highlands Ranch yesterday and opened fire on students in two classrooms. Doctors in China have been experimenting with deep brain stimulation to cure drug addiction. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets were winners. A's pitcher Mike Fiers threw a no-hitter as Oakland shut out the Reds 2-0. The Red Sox beat the Orioles 8-5. The Nationals lost. The Giants won. NBA playoffs, Toronto and Denver won. NHL playoffs, after double overtime, the Blues advanced after beating the Stars in Game 7 of their Western Conference semifinal series. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan?
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 6:20 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and we're joined now by Christopher Sell, the editor of the Bloomberg Oil Brief. Nice to talk with you as always, Chris. We've been seeing a bit of a slump in the oil market the last couple of weeks, and now renewed risk from U.S.-China trade tensions. Where is the crude market now?
Morning. Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, crude has really been seesawing as it's trying to sort of really get a handle on where the sort of bigger risk to the price is. It slumped sort of at the end of the end of April because Saudi Arabia stepped in and implied, along with its non-OPEC ally Russia, that they will ensure that they could ensure there will be no supply issues when Iranian crude comes off the table, which, as we know, Trump has enforced the sanctions, and those waivers which were given to the buyers of Iranian crude ended on May the 2nd. So the market kind of relaxed there. But there is a huge number of issues going on in the market, wherever you look. In Eastern Europe, Russia has a major contamination problem, which is still ongoing, with the problem of organic chlorides in its crude. That is still sort of playing out. So there's concerns there. There are concerns, obviously, with fighting, which is ongoing in Libya. There is issues, obviously, ongoing in Venezuela. So there's comfort on one side, there's concerns over the other. And obviously, looming over this, if you like, at the moment, an immediate issue is the trade talks with US and China, and that the impact that could have on demand. That seems to be what some of the analyst notes today are saying, is that the market's going to wait to see what happens when, obviously, the Chinese delegation comes to Washington, and I believe there'll be talks Thursday and Friday.
Right.
If those blow up, then demand could really take a hit. But it just depends where you want to look and what you want to consider to be the bigger influence, on the oil market, because there are plenty.
Yeah. I mean, are oil traders at this point settling on any one catalyst for what could move the market? What about Saudi Arabia, injecting supply back in? I mean, can they meet that commitment?
I think Saudi Arabia, with Russia on board, will do. And I think they've alluded to the fact that they will they probably will consider extending their supply sort of agreement that they've got ongoing until the end of the year. Of course, OPEC will meet again in June, which is when the current agreement will end. But a lot of people think that they will just keep a close eye on trying to ensure the market isn't over or undersupplied. Mm-hmm. The Iranian issue seems to be flaring up, because obviously we've seen today that Iran has mentioned that they're going to pull back from some of the voluntary obligations they've got under the nuclear agreement, which I guess is inevitable since Trump, did what it did 12 months ago. So that is obviously ongoing. And That Iran is an issue. The Russian issue is still quite strong as well. But if you want to worry about supply, you can also be comforted by the fact that the U.S. is consistently pumping out a vast, vast amount.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because we're going to get another read from the Energy Information Institute later this morning, EIA. What's the expectation heading in our last 30 seconds here?
EIA yesterday actually had in its short-term energy outlook, it actually increased its crude forecast for 2019 to 12.45 million barrels a day, which is just off where it currently is on a weekly basis. I think it was just a record of 12.2. There's no suggestion that US is going to suddenly start declining its crude output. Yeah. It's going to stay very strong for this year.
Christopher Sell, editor of the Bloomberg Oil Brief. Thanks, as always, for the debrief on a very interesting crude market. And you can read Chris's analysis and other news, market data, and expert commentary from the world's most trusted economist and analyst in the Bloomberg Brief, digital newsletters. Sign up now at BloombergBriefs.com. Terminal customers simply use the function Brief Go on the Bloomberg terminal. And checking West Texas intermediate prices right now, they're down about 0.5%, 29 cents lower, trading at $61.12 a barrel. Brent, the international trademark, down 0.7%, down 48 cents. The barrel costs $69.40. Stay with us. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Burden LLP. Let Burden create innovative tax solutions to benefit your family and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com. Burden, accountants and advisors. They listen, they solve, they do.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130.
To Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991.
To Boston.
Bloomberg 1061.
To San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960.
To the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119.
And around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date in the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures and European equities are lower following yesterday's 1.7% drop for the S&P 500. In Asia, Japan's Nikkei fell 1.5%, and stocks in China dropped 1.4%.
Now, that drop came after China's exports unexpectedly fell in April, while imports rose. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has more from Hong Kong.
This activity was before the U.S.-China trade talks took a turn for the worse. Even so, exports fell 2.7% compared to estimates for a gain of 3%. Imports expanded 4%, and that countered estimates for a drop of 2.1%. The trade surplus with the United States in the first 4 months of 2019 expanded 10.5% from the same period last year. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Brian, thank you. Meanwhile, U.S.-China trade talks resume in Washington tomorrow. J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon is putting the odds of a deal at 80%. He spoke with Bloomberg in Beijing.
Just get the proper trade deal done. And it may take a little bit more time, but I think we should do the proper trade deal. I'd rather not do a deal than do a bad deal.
Dimon also says it would be a huge mistake for U.S. policy to be set based on the stock market.
On the eve of Uber's planned $9 billion IPO, drivers in New York, Boston, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and London plan to stage global protests. Next hour, 7 a.m. Wall Street time. It's billed as a strike over low wages and unstable working conditions.
Shares of Lyft are down 1% in early trading in its first financial report since going public. The ride-hailing company topped sales estimates and assured investors that hefty losses will decrease next year. Coming up today, Disney leads 10 companies in the S&P 500 reporting earnings.
And in Europe, more of the same from Commerzbank after the breakdown of merger talks with Deutsche Bank. Commerzbank added more corporate and retail clients in the first quarter, but saw revenue decline by almost 3%.
Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And right now, S&P futures are down 12 points, Dow futures down 96, NASDAQ futures down 38. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.1%. CAC in Paris is down 0.2%. FTSE 100 down 0.3%. And we are watching the VIX this morning. It is above 20 at its highest level since January. 10-year Treasury up 7/32, yield 2.42%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.26%. NYMEX crude oil down 0.3% or 24 cents at $61.16 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.3% or $3.80 to $12.89.40 an ounce. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thank you, Karen. 6:33 on Wall Street, and the news update is brought to you by Withum, a forward-thinking, technology-driven advisory and accounting firm helping clients be in a position of strength in today's modern business landscape. Visit Withum.com to learn more. Now here's Bloomberg's Michael Parr.
Thank you, Nathan. Iran says it will stop complying with parts of the 2015 nuclear deal. Speaking through an interpreter, President Hassan Rouhani set a 60-day deadline for new terms for its nuclear deal.
Anytime when we received necessary nuclear material, even a kilogram worth of that material, we would sell the remaining balance of that weight to a third country and in return receive yellow cake. That sale will stop today.
Rouhani blames hardliners in the U.S. for working to undermine the agreement. Six people are dead, including four children, after a fire broke out in a Harlem apartment. The blaze happened on the fifth floor of the Samuel City houses overnight. Denver area authorities say one student is dead and eight others are wounded after two suspects opened fire at a charter school. Douglas County officials say officers arrived on the scene just 2 minutes after the first gunshots were fired. The two suspects are in custody. President Trump is said to have paid no or very little federal income taxes after huge losses between 1985 and 1994. According to the New York Times, Trump racked up more than $1.1 billion worth of losses in that time. The New York Senate is planning a vote today on legislation that could give Congress access to President Trump's state tax returns. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is warning that the Trump administration's defiance of subpoenas could be an impeachable offense. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
Speaker Pelosi softening her opposition to impeachment, saying the president is goading them into proceedings.
We can't impeach him for political reasons, and we can't not impeach him for political reasons. We have to see where the facts take us.
Saying divisive politics is no longer a reason not to impeach, nor the reason to impeach. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Former White House Chief of Staff John Kelly said members of President Trump's family serving on the White House staff needed to be dealt with as he sought an orderly process in the West Wing. Kelly spoke to Carlyle Group founder David Rubenstein for an upcoming episode of Peer-to-Peer Conversations on Bloomberg TV. Kelly was also asked about the president's tweets.
The president feels very, very strongly, whether you agree with this or not, very strongly that he's not dealt with by the press fairly, and that his tweeting goes around the press and gets his agenda out, his word out to the world without having to rely on a press conference.
Global News, 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thanks. 6:36 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, ninth inning drama. First, it was the Yankees. They trailed Seattle 4-2. Gio Urshela tied the game with a two-run homer. DJ LeMay, who sent everyone who had sat through an earlier rain delay home with a walk-off hit to cap three runs in the bottom of the ninth and a 5-4 win over the Mariners. A happy Aaron Boone.
What a great effort. You know, we didn't play perfect, obviously. We hung around enough, and the next guy up, again, got it done. I mean, Gio, what a great at-bat there with two strikes. Shows off a little bit of the power there. Cameron Maben, man, with a really good at-bat to get it going. And then, you know, the stolen base. DJ does what DJ does.
Yanks have won 13 of 17. Then it was the Mets' turn. They trailed in San Diego 5-2. Seventh inning, it was 5-5 in the ninth when Pete Alonso hit a titanic two-run homer. The Padres got one back in the bottom, had the bases loaded, but the Mets hung on a much-needed 7-6 win and a four-game losing streak. There are plenty of Hall of Fame pitchers who never threw a no-hitter. Mike Fiers is no Hall of Famer, yet he has now tossed two no-hitters. He had one 4 years ago with Houston last night in Oakland, a game delayed an hour and a half because the lights weren't working. Fires no-hit the Reds. They let him finish despite 131 pitches. The NBA playoff series between Denver and Portland had been so close, tied at two, a four overtime game three, but the Nuggets won game five by 26. This after Toronto beat Philadelphia by 36. Stanley Cup playoffs, double overtime in Game 7, St. Louis 2, Dallas 1. The Blues advance to the West Finals. Winner Country House will not be in the Preakness. First time the Derby winner hasn't been in the Preakness since 1996. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you very much. We are coming up to 6:38 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
I'm Tara LaChapelle, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. If you had bought a single Class A share of Berkshire Hathaway 25 years ago, you would have made about $300,000 by now. Four shares and you'd be a millionaire. Warren Buffett has made a lot of people rich, but it's unclear whether history will repeat itself. The stock price gains have slowed, and younger people, Americans in particular, may not develop quite the same fascination with Berkshire when Buffett's gone, or as strong an appreciation for his form of investing in general. Buffett and the executives who will succeed him need to start thinking about how to court the next generation of Berkshire Hathaway investors. It's something they've never had to give much thought to before. After all, last weekend, tens of thousands flocked to Omaha, Nebraska for the company's annual shareholder meeting. But Buffett is turning 89, and his business wingman, Charlie Munger, is 95. And last weekend showed that many of Berkshire's followers are aging, too. Buffett needs to think about what that will mean for the future of the company. I'm Tara LaChapelle. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPINGO on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Time now, 6:39 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Green Report with Patrice Sikora.
Utilities may not have championed the rise of renewables, but they may be a surprising beneficiary of the Green New Deal. The plan aims to rid America's power grids of carbon emissions, and analysts at credit sites say that could help speed up existing trends in the sector, including coal retirements and the increasing deployment of renewables. Utilities are increasingly looking to own wind and solar assets that are now among the cheapest electrical sources. And analysts note that ownership is great for utility credit quality, because it allows these companies to earn a fixed return on the assets. The Green New Deal's promotion of electric vehicles is another perk for utilities, because increased ownership leads to higher electric use. But there could be a drawback if subsidies for homeowners with residential solar are revived. The Green New Deal itself is facing an uphill push in Congress. Not all Democrats are on board with the entire plan, and some analysts say its breadth may have made it an easy target for political opponents. And that's a Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Patrice Sikora.
All right, Patrice, thank you. Another story we're following this morning. Toyota's come out with a full-year forecast that fell short of analyst projections. The Japanese automaker is spending more on incentives to make up for sluggish car demand in the U.S. Toyota also announced a $2.7 billion share buyback program. Futures extending losses this morning. S&P futures down nearly 13 points. Dow futures down 98 points. NASDAQ futures down 39.5. 10-year Treasury yield 2.42%. The 2-year, 2.26%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Coming up to 6:41 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, more of our conversation with JPMorgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon. What does he put the chances for a U.S.-China trade deal? Stay with us. This is Daybreak. Good morning.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, 6:47 on Wall Street. Futures are falling this morning. Let's go to the first word, breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures under pressure again today with Dow futures down 90 points. S&P's dropped 12 and NASDAQ futures decline by 37. The U.S. 10-year yield falls to 2.43% and Shanghai fell 1.1% overnight. Well, European markets are also trading lower this morning, and note that Draghi speaks at 7:30. Back in the U.S. on the economic front, energy numbers at 10:30. And after the bell last night, Electronic Arts beat estimates. Shares are up 7% in the pre-market. And Lyft revenue beat estimates. Shares are little changed. In deal news, RBC said that NCR may be worth in the mid-40s in a takeout. And wrapping things up, Mosaic was upgraded at Credit Suisse and JP Morgan, while Mylan was downgraded to market perform over at Wells Fargo. Live from the First of Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
Bill, thank you. To hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, a Russian member of parliament says Iran's partial withdrawal from the 2015 nuclear accord is a direct response to increased pressure from Washington. Iran's president says the Islamic Republic will keep its excess enriched uranium in heavy water, setting a 60-day deadline for new terms for its nuclear deal. The House Judiciary Committee is moving forward with a vote to hold Attorney General William Barr in contempt of Congress after last-minute negotiations stalled with the Justice Department over access to the full unredacted version of the special counsel's report. In baseball, the Yankees and Mets were winners. The A's pitcher Mike Fiers threw a no-hitter as Oakland shut out the Reds 2-0. The Red Sox beat the Orioles 8-5. The Nationals lost. The Giants won. NBA playoffs, Toronto and Denver won. In the NHL playoffs, after double overtime, the Blues advanced after beating the Stars in Game 7 of their Western Conference semifinal series. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Karen.
Michael, thank you. Jamie Dimon is weighing in on U.S.-China trade talks and this week's sell-off in global equities. The J.P. Morgan Chase CEO spoke with Bloomberg in Beijing overnight. Let's bring you more of that conversation now with Jamie Dimon speaking to Bloomberg's Stephen Engel about the current state of trade negotiations.
I don't think they get the deal done by Friday, and I'm hoping they don't put tariffs in place. I hope they finish the agreement. But it took whatever the odds were before. Like, I think it's still 80% they'll get it done. The odds of something bad happening is now doubled. Whatever you thought they were, if it was 2% or 5%, 10%, is probably doubled. And that's why the markets are reacting to it, because they're not just afraid of the direct effect, the rate of the if it reverses global trade. It can slow down global growth. It can hurt a lot of economies around the world.
Well, it could. I mean, the IMF already is projecting global growth for the world to be at its slowest pace since the global financial crisis, and that's with the China deal.
Yeah.
Do you think it could be as dire as that, worse than that, if this trade deal falls through?
I think that the world economy is actually doing okay. You know, China's growing at 6.5%. That's $1 trillion of growth. America's growing, it looks like, almost 3%. That's $500 billion of growth. So, yeah, it's slowed down a little bit, but it's still active. But one of the fly in the ointment would be this. If this goes really south, I think that could change global growth.
Do you feel the talks, though, perhaps are getting a little bit of a louder voice in the White House? And also even here, too, as there is a bit of a pushback to the comments coming from Donald Trump. And in that sense, do you hang tough or do you haggle for a less than ideal deal?
I think both sides should do what's in their own best interest. So hang tough. Yeah, I think there are serious issues. I think they need to be seriously resolved. I think they've made a lot of progress in doing that. I think it's good for both the Chinese and the Americans. So neither side has to do something. I think it's a mistake. And I think it's a terrible error to say, well, it's because we're doing better in the economy. Just get the proper trade deal done. And it may take a little bit more time, but I think we should do the proper trade deal. I'd rather not do a deal than do a bad deal. I think that's a bad idea for America and for China. And remember, Japan and Europe also have a vested interest in this. So we're not really coordinated with them, but they certainly would like to see a proper trade deal done between China and America, and then they can support it.
You think they can overcome the big differences, and that is getting a verifiable timetable for implementation of their pledges, as well as a reversing of the forced technology transfers and some of the other big issues on intellectual property, right?
Yeah. I don't think there's anything that can't be resolved. I mean, China's already opened up a lot of its industries. So I think they had 100 protected industries, and we have like 25. And they've been doing that anyway. They need reform in their own markets for bond markets and equity markets, for transparency, rule of law. They need that, too. So I don't expect the Chinese to do anything that's in our interest. I think they can do what's in their own self-interest. But I think these things are in their own self-interest. And I think Americans shouldn't blow out of proportion. A lot of state-owned enterprises don't do well. So while you don't want really unfair competition, let's not blow it completely out of proportion. You know, a country like China is allowed to have industrial policy. I wish America had better industrial policy. So let them work it out.
J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon speaking with Bloomberg's Stephen Engel in Beijing as Chinese trade negotiators head to Washington for the latest round of talks. Nathan.
All right. Thank you, Karen. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it's coming up to 6:53 on Wall Street. That's not all that's happening in Washington, though. Let's check some of the other top stories, including Attorney General William Barr facing a contempt vote for not releasing the unredacted Mueller report. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi warning President Trump may be trying to goad Democrats into impeachment. And the president meets with his cabinet today before holding a campaign rally tonight in Florida. Also making news, tax records obtained by the New York Times that show the president took steep business losses in the 1980s and 90s. For more on all this, we're joined by Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. Obviously, Kate, these aren't the tax records Democrats are looking for, but what do they tell us about the president's businesses during his Art of the Deal days?
Well, essentially, the president ran in 2016 on a narrative of being a very successful businessman. And I think most fundamentally, these records basically don't mesh with that message and kind of call it into question whether or not that is entirely accurate. And in that regard, I think it fuels Democrats' requests for more recent tax returns. They've asked the Treasury Department to turn over 6 years of more recent tax returns. And specifically what they're looking into is whether there is any evidence of influence by foreign powers in those tax returns. That's one of the primary things they're looking for. But I think that, you know, this seeming disconnect between between how Trump portrayed himself in the campaign and what these tax records show will add an element to Democrats' argument that the public deserves to see some more information about Trump's finances.
Are you expecting that we could see a political impact from this revelation? I mean, the New York Times has done reporting on the president's past finances before, and it doesn't seem to have really affected his standing in the polls.
Yeah, I think that, you know, folks that are true hardcore Trump supporters aren't necessarily going to be swayed by this. This is one of those kinds of stories that I think while it had a very big sort of bombshell impact in Washington, you know, it in some ways just reinforces a lot of what Trump's opponents already, you know, may think about him. And, you know, for his supporters, it doesn't necessarily register as a big issue. The question is whether there are folks in the middle, independents, who might be swayed by this. And, you know, while I'm inclined to say no, I think it's, you know, it's possible. It's all part of kind of a building block of the message that Democrats are or the narrative that Democrats are trying to build heading into 2020, which is that the president hasn't been upfront with the American people.
Yeah. And in terms of that narrative, we heard from House Speaker Pelosi yesterday talking about the president with fighting subpoenas, you know, potentially committing impeachable offenses just on its face. At the same time, though, saying the president might be trying to goad Democrats into impeachment. I mean, there's a lot of political calculus, a lot of chess going on here.
Absolutely. And Pelosi has been very hesitant all along to even, you know, utter the word impeachment publicly, you know, other than to say that Democrats aren't, you know, eager to go that route unless they're forced to. I think that, you know, we've seen her be very calculating in how she's approached this. And in some ways, you know, I think it's a correct observation. You know, we're seeing it on both sides that the Trump administration has made the calculation that they think that, you know, if Democrats do get backed into a corner and have to pursue impeachment, that that would be potentially risky for them. Perhaps even riskier for them than it would be for the president. And so I think that the concern that's coming out now, you know, from Pelosi more more overtly is that concern. And I think that, you know, there certainly is at least an ancillary benefit to the Trump administration's approach to all of these congressional investigations in that it does make the likelihood that Democrats could pursue impeachment even higher.
In our last 30 seconds here, what's the calculation for Democratic presidential candidates in terms of the impeachment discussion?
Well, they really don't want to be talking about impeachment. They want to be talking about how they're going to benefit, in their view, the middle class and, you know, promote policies that they see as better than the policies that Trump is promoting. And so I think that, you know, to them, impeachment is a potentially risky distraction.
All right. Thanks, as always. Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. You can read more of these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg terminal. And a reminder, you can follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington. Bloomberg 99.1. And 105.7 FM HD2. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. And S&P futures are lower this morning, down 11 points. Dow futures down 88. NASDAQ futures down 36. And the 10-year Treasury up 8/32. The yield 2.42%. The yield on the 2-year 2.26%. And Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow. And this is Bloomberg.